Hi, I'm Andy Malone. Welcome to this Microsoft Virtual Academy series on Office 365. In this session, we're going to focus on exam 7347, which is enabling Office 365 services. So, who am I? Well, my name is Andy Malone. I'm an MVP and also an MCT for 20 years. I'm the co-founder of the Cybercrime Security Forum, and I speak worldwide. I'm also an author. Last year, I published my first novel. It's a sci-fi thriller. It's called The Seventh Day, and it was fun to write, by the way. So, what are we going to cover in this session? Okay, well, in the last session, in the 7346, it was all about planning and deployment, administration. It was about sync and Active Directory Federation services. So really here what we're looking at is we're talking about enhancing our experience in Office 365. So in this part, we're really looking at deploying Microsoft Office Pro Plus, or I call it OPP. This is all about Microsoft SharePoint online. It's about Exchange online. It's about migration. It's about going hybrid to Office 365. We also take a look at Skype for Business in this section as well. So let's dive in and have a look. So, exam 347, enabling Office 365 services. So really, this exam, as I mentioned, focuses on the more in-depth applications themselves. So yes, managing the clients. So when we talk about the client, of course, we're talking about the software, Office Professional Pro Plus. We're talking about provisioning SharePoint online, sites and site collections. We're talking about configuring Exchange online and also planning for Exchange online and Skype for Business. So we're looking at things like migration. We're looking at deploying Office so that your users can use it. Okay, so the first of those topics that we're going to look at is the Office Pro Plus deployment. So here, it's really all about how can I deploy Office Pro Plus to my users? And we're going to talk about the different ways of deploying it. So we're looking at, yes, you know, the user might decide to, hey, I want to go ahead and download that myself, or it might be the corporate side of it. So do I want to actually deploy this to my users? And of course, you can deploy it. There's a whole bunch of deployment tools that you can use. There's things like SCCM, System Center Configuration Manager. There are tools like Windows Intune. So a little bit later in this session, we're going to talk about MDM, Mobile Device Management, which is very hot. And Office 365 and Windows Intune are really come together to enforce your corporate policies, but perhaps users are using their own devices. And that's one of the nice things about Office 365 is that you can use the device, or you can consume the data on a whole range of devices. In fact, you'll see that I'm actually using a MacBook. It doesn't really matter what device, whether you're consuming Office over the web, whether you're using Office Pro Plus on a Mac or even on a PC. So let's take a look at some of the topics that we're going to talk about. So in this section, then, we're talking about managing user-driven deployment. So a user can just go in to the portal. They can decide whether to download the software themselves. We'll talk about managing IT deployments of Office Pro Plus. What about setting up telemetry and reporting and also planning for Office clients? So as I mentioned, the three main ways of deploying Office, really we're talking about the self-installation, so the user can go to the portal, they can decide on what version of Office they want to download, whether it's 2013 or the new 2016. Whether it's a managed deployment. So this is where, for example, you might have an internal IT department, they download the product, they maybe want to do a little bit of customization and essentially push that out to their users. And the third option, of course, it might already be on their device. So if you've gone out and purchased, let's say, a Microsoft Surface device or even a Microsoft phone, you might find that the actual software is on there already. And this is quite an interesting area, actually, because in the past, we really needed a license key to install this software. Today, we don't need that at all. Today, it's about subscriptions. So as long as we're subscribed to the product, we'll actually get an opportunity to use it. So you'll find that many devices come with Office Pro Plus. We can install, look at our documents, we can read our documents, but we can't print, we can't cut, copy, and we can't edit documents unless you've got a subscription. And of course, it's not just Microsoft that's actually looking at subscription-based software. Many other vendors are looking at this as well. So what is Office Pro Plus? Well, Office Pro Plus is a very, very thin-based series of applications. So I suppose you could call it is based on AppV technology. And the idea of a Pro Plus is in the previous versions of Office 365, it was very much a very fat install. It was almost a gigabyte in size. But now you can actually download Office Pro Plus very, very quick. And it's sometimes referred to as click-to-run technologies, of course. So let's have a look at that and dive a little bit further into this. So first up then, self-installation. The user has the ability to go to the portal, sign in as a licensed Office 365 user, and actually download the software. Now, whether you're a Mac, whether you're using a Mac, or whether you're using a PC, you can now download Office 2016. Of course, this is where the administrator can actually manage licenses. So this is a new feature in Office recently. So, for example, I've got a little demo account here. You can see on the left-hand side here, I've gone into my user administration portal, and there is a new option here to manage software. So this is kind of cool because on the right-hand side, it shows me all the installations of Office Pro Plus. And one of the nice things about Office Pro Plus, of course, is that we can actually have five licenses for our main devices. So if you're using a PC, if you're using a Mac, you can actually install Office on up to five PCs or Macs. But on top of that, you also get an additional license for let's say mobile devices. So if you're using a Windows phone, an iOS device, so an iPhone, I should say, and also an Android phone as well, you can download the software and get a similar experience on all of those devices. So let's have a quick look at more details then. So what we'll talk about then is how we can, as an administrator, is it possible for us to manage that software? So if the software is updated, how we can actually manage that as well. So I'm just going to go into my web browser. Okay, and if I just go in here, let's just have a quick look at this. So first up then, I'm in the portal here, as you can see, and you can download the software in a number of places. So here on the right-hand side, you can see I can go ahead, I can click on download software here, and right away it detects that I'm on the Mac version of the software. But if I want to go for the PC version, of course, I can do that. So you've got Word, Excel, PowerPoint, whatever the latest versions are. Now, this is just a demo account. So if you've got a paid subscription, you'll also see at the moment it's advertising just the 2016 version. But if you've got a paid subscription, and again, depending on the subscription that you've got, you'll actually be able to choose between 2013 and 2016. Just one interesting little point to note here, by the way, that if you are downloading Office 2016, do remember that 2016 doesn't work with Exchange 2007. So if you've got Exchange 2007 in your infrastructure, you really want to think about either upping that to 2010 and higher if you plan to use 2016. Of course, if you continue using 2013 or 2010, then that Exchange 2007 is absolutely fine. So going back to the screen here, so I can just go ahead, I can download this, you can view the system requirements. Now some of the other features here, so for example, the tools and add-ins, you'll notice that these can only be available on a PC. So for example, there's some support tools here, InfoPath, and there's also SharePoint Designer 2013. So if you're a bit of a web design guru, then you can download that software from the PC version. Of course, Skype for Business is available, and I can go ahead and download this. And then it talks about the desktop setup as well. So this is really if you're using an older version of Office Pro Plus or Microsoft Office. So if you've got 2010 or you've got 2000 and an older version, this will actually configure Office 365 to work with those versions of the software. If you click on the phone and tablet area, this just shows you that there are versions available for all the mobile devices. So as I mentioned, it's really not about the device anymore. It's how, as a user, I can get access to my data. And whether you choose to consume that data through the web, whether you choose to consume it through a browser or through an app, again, it's entirely up to you. So that's downloading the software here. So I'm just going to flick back here. Alrighty. So as I mentioned, managing that software, you can go. You can download it yourself. Now, if you're an IT pro, it would be nice to be able to control or manage that deployment. So in this next little section, we're going to talk about managing the deployment from an IT pro perspective. And the core tool that we're going to use here is a tool called the ODT, the Office Deployment Tool, which is a fantastically simple tool. And this definitely features in this particular exam. Now, there's two versions of this tool. There's a brand new version, by the way, just updated for Office 2016. And this particular tool, it's got the additional feature of branch office deployment. So again, although I'm not featuring that here, you maybe want to download, there's two different versions. The latest version covers both 2016, 2013 as well. So let's talk about how it actually works then. So very, very simple tool. So the idea is that you can control, obviously, where the users should download Microsoft Office from. So the idea is you download the software, you put it in a share somewhere, and then we create this little file. So we have this file called configuration.xml. And here you can specify, for example, where the software is going to be downloaded from, the configuration, whether you want a particular build, let's say a 64-bit build or a 32-bit build, the packager. So it is possible to go ahead and create an app vpackage, you know, that really lightweight package. You can also set up help as well. So you can see at the bottom, you can control things like the version, the architecture, the languages, and all of these are managed here. So the first of those then is the download. And you can see that this little sample here, you can use the add source path with a parameter, the server, the share, and also the version number. So you can see this is the latest version. So if at a later point you wanted to push out a more up-to-date version, it's very, very easy to do that. The other thing that you can also do is you can specify the architecture, so client edition 32 or 64-bit version. So next then is, and again, you can see that same example here. Now, another thing that you might want to push out is a language. So you can see the default language here is English US, but again, I'm often asked, Andy, is it possible to have multiple languages here? Absolutely. You can add multiple languages here as well. And at a later point, you might say, well, what happens if I need to remove that language? So if I install the Japanese language or the Norwegian language, and at a later point, that particular user leaves the company and I no longer need that. Again, all you need to do is just delete that line of text and reissue that file. So You can see in this slide here, there you go, there's an example. So in, let's say, for example, in a college or in a school, you may have users with multiple language requirements. So this is where the user can actually choose their own language version. All right, so what about, again, silent deployments? So you'll know if you've ever installed any software that it often asks you to accept a EULA, what we call the End User License Agreement. So it's nice here, you can actually choose whether, you know, yeah, just go ahead and accept it. I don't want anything to pop up for my user, so the user doesn't need to click anything. So you can either have that switched off, of course, where you know there's no user interaction, or you can actually enable it again, depending on your own needs there. So what else can we do? Now, is it possible to include or exclude particular versions of software? Absolutely. So we can see Skype for Business. You might not, for example, if you're in a school, you might know what the kids using Skype for Business, but you might want them using Microsoft Word or PowerPoint or Publisher and so on. So you can see here, you can use the exclude app parameter. So exclude app equals Skype for Business, for example. What about configuration? Now, obviously an important part of software deployment is the updates. So again, as administrators, over the last few years, we've been used to having these big fat updates in service packs. One of the nice things about Microsoft Office 365 is that we don't have service packs anymore. In Exchange, you might have cumulative updates, but these updates are not huge and they don't come kind of regular. Instead of this, we have this kind of drip, drip, drip methodology. So by the time a new version of the software comes out, so 2016 or 2020 or whatever it's going to be called, you're already there. You already meet the requirements for that. So moving to that new version is not such a problem. Also, you can see here, there's three little examples here. So on the left, you might say, well, what if I need to remove Pro Plus from a user? Again, absolutely no problem. So because it's using this MSI technology, the Microsoft Installer technology, absolutely no problem. You can just uninstall the application. You can remove a specific language, or you might want to go and remove all the content of this. Now, what about, this is interesting. If you work in an environment, let's say a hospital where you have a shared workstation, or a library where, again, shared workstations where multiple users can need access to Microsoft Office, this particular feature is really useful. So in this case, we've set up a PC. Office 365 or Office Pro Plus is installed, but it's not activated. So Bob comes along, and Bob is an approved Office 365 user. So he's licensed. So Bob logs on, gets access to his account, and he can do all his work in Office, saves his changes, and then logs on. Karen comes along, and Karen is also an approved user. She's authenticated, she's licensed. Again, she can use her documents. But when she logs off, Tom comes along, and Tom is not, he doesn't have an account, so he doesn't have a subscription with Office 365. Now, in this scenario, Tom is able to open his documents, he can read his documents, but he can't make any changes to anything, and he also can't print his documents as well. So this is a particularly useful feature. I've also seen this things like, for example, in terminal services as well, or remote desktop services scenarios. This can be very useful there. Okay, so how is this accomplished then? Well, again, this is called shared computer configuration. And essentially, it's composed of two things. First of all, we do an automatic acceptance of the license. So you can see here, accept EULA true. But the key one here, certainly for the exams anyway, is the property name shared computer licensing with a value of one. So obviously if the value is zero, you switch it off. But in this case, the value of one. Now, on top of this, we also need to push out a little registry edit as well. So you can see here on the right-hand side that we need to add the regsz, and we call it in the HK local machine, office auto run configuration, and basically we add this shared computer licensing parameter with a value of one. So a regsz shared computer licensing with a value of one. Now, one of the things I mentioned about Office 365 is it's constantly evolving. And as an administrator, and in fact, preparing for exams can be quite tricky for this software because it always is drip, 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 it's changing. And in fact, in many situations, if you've not gone into the admin portal, maybe after a week or so, you walk in again, it suddenly changes. So ensuring that you're up to date. Now, I'm going to give you one little tip for that, by the way. So I'm going to flip over to my portal here. And I'm just going to go into my Office 365 Admin Center. And this is really important. So I'm going to scroll down here. And if I go into my service settings here, one of the options in my service settings is for updates. And this can have a major impact on your Office 365 experience. So if I was a standard user, essentially, there's nothing you can really do about blocking software coming through. You can delay it, obviously gives you a chance to prepare for it. But are you the type of organization that you don't want first release? So I'm going to say I just want standard releases. So if a new feature comes out, it's normally advertised between 7 and 21 days ahead of release. But if you want it first, you might say, hey, I'm fine with this. I'm fine with the new features. So if you're a small company, for example, getting these new features for the entire organization is not really going to be a problem. But if you are a very large organization, one of the things that you may want to do is you maybe want just to select specific people to get the most up-to-date features, okay? So I just thought I'd point that out because it really is, it is quite important and it can have an effect on your whole Office 365 experience. So let me just go back to my dashboard. Now, brand new, this has just been released by Microsoft. So if you download the Office deployment tool today, traditionally it was just a text file. So it's just this configuration.xml file. If you're a little nervous about that and you prefer the old click, click, click method, then this is fantastic. So this is for Office Pro Plus. This is a little GUI that you can download, all right? So if you just do a little search for the UI configuration generator, the Office Office 365 UI configuration generator. This is a fantastic tool. Okay, so what did we talk about there? We talked about planning for Office clients. And again, you can see where you can download these tools. Of course, do you want to make these tools available to your users? Do you want to make them available through the web so they can just use the web apps or on a mobile device? Or do you want them to use the rich applications? How can we manage this, of course, as an organization? We can use group policy, of course. So along with the Office deployment tool and the software themselves, you can also download the ADMX templates for these applications as well. So you can control things like, when you want to push updates out, the update path and so on. So again, you for the exam, you definitely want to look at some of the group policy templates there. Now, obviously, one of the nice things as an administrator, or one of the useful things as an administrator, I should say, is to know who's got Microsoft Office, who's using Microsoft Office, who's productive with it, and also, is anybody having problems with it? So there is a set of telemetry tools that you can download, and this provides some, obviously, telemetry data and also reporting as well. So again, you can enable this through group policy. You can switch, set up the telemetry service, and you can then view any potential reports afterwards. Again, if you plan to do the exam, take a look at some of the TechNet articles here. They're actually very, very useful. So really four steps that you need to do. You need to collect the data, of course. So this involves downloading a little agent on the user's machine. Then we use the analysis tools to actually look at the user's data. So are there any problems? Is there any problems with the software? Maybe they're using an out-of-date version or something like that. Then it's very useful things like deployment and also for planning for deployment as well. So in terms of gathering and using the data, this is the analysis tool here. So of course, if you've got the agents deployed on all your users, on all your users' machines, you can pull off nice reports like this, which give you information on potential issues, potential problems. But also, it's nice to know how many of your users are actually using Office 2016 or 2013, and what features are the most popular features. This is quite useful for things like licensing purposes. Okay, so you can see here, you've got the document status tracker here. Again, very, very easy. Just download that little agent and you can then obviously view up those reports. So just a few things just to be aware of here. Of course, if you're going to run this tool, you're going to use this tool, make sure that you've got the appropriate permissions. Watch out. It does help for things like infrastructure issues, any problems there, things like missing data, performance, really quite useful for capacity planning. So in the 7346 course, we spoke about the different plans in Office 365. And I mentioned that in the smaller plans, the business plans, you could have up to 300 users. And in the enterprise plans, you can have potentially unlimited users. So again, if you're planning to deploy Office Pro Plus to all of these users, then tools like the telemetry, it provides invaluable information. Okay, so up next, we're now going to look at our next topic, which is mobile device management. Now, mobile device management is a hot topic, okay? So if you go to any kind of Microsoft event, everybody's talking about this. Now, what we can see here is you've got something called conditional access, device management, and selective wipe. So in the past, of course, as maybe an Outlook user, as an Exchange administrator, we've had a technology called Active Sync. Now, Active Sync is really nice, you know, in a corporate world because it helps us deploy software. If it's on a corporate mobile device, for example, it's fantastic. So if the device is lost or if it's stolen, you can do a remote wipe on that machine. However, in today's world, of course, it's all about bring your own device. So bring your own iPhone, bring your own Windows phone. So, of course, I don't want you to do a remote wipe of my device. So from a corporate perspective, how can I do it so that I can just delete the corporate data? But also because you are using your own device on my network, you might want to, rather than just having your users log in with a simple username and password, you might want to set up something called conditional access. And this is essentially where the user has to prove themselves as a valid user on our network. Now, of course, we have brand new features in Office 365 for all of this. I'm going to show you this in a second. But if you can also take this further with products like Windows Intune. And Windows Intune and Office 365 really kind of connect together to provide a great mobile device management platform. So let's take a look here. So, as I mentioned, conditional access. We've got device management. So we're not just talking about mobile devices, phones. In the slide here, it talks about, it looks like you can manage an iPad, a laptop, a PC. Just to let you know that you can do conditional access, you can do mobile device management, that's your phones, and you can do a selective wipe with the features that are included in Office 365. If, however, you want to do PC deployments, if you want to deploy software, if you want to set up group policies on PCs and other types of devices. On the right-hand side, you can see data protection. So this is a feature of Windows Intune that you can have your corporate data, your corporate apps running in a separate bubble to the user. So if my device was stolen, let's say, then you can delete just the corporate data, so the end user or the home user is left. Now, the other thing about running your data in this corporate bubble is you can actually ask for additional authentication for access to that. So if your kids are using your iPad, for example, and they can play their games, but when they try to get in your corporate data, they're going to need to use a separate authentication mechanism there. Okay, so device management then, this is the Windows Intune screen. I'll show you the Office 365 in a second, but just to show you, this is Windows Intune. So yes, you can see you get this dashboard view where you can get this overall view. The groups, so let's say, for example, you are a consultant, you can manage all your customers. If you've got 20 customers, you can create 20 groups. And out of those groups, you can then deploy a little agent onto each of their devices, and you can manage their devices for them. You can see you can also set up alerts. You can deploy software, which is, again, great. You can also do software updates. So if you're familiar with technologies like Configuration Manager, this really brings Configuration Manager. Rather than Configuration Manager is great for a domain, an internal organization. So this is where Windows Intune is really exciting, because you can work with multiple organizations here. Okay, so let's have a little demo, and there's a few things that we've got here. So if I first of all just go, I'm just going to go into my Exchange. So in my Exchange admin here, you can see I can, you've got a mobile area here. So this is very much the familiar, if you're familiar with Microsoft Exchange, you know, this has been in Exchange for a very long time. So it just shows me any quarantine devices. This is really talking about internal. So internal mobile devices. So I can create device policies. I can set up things like ActiveSync. And you can do this for both Windows and Apple devices as well. You can also set up mobile device mailbox policies here as well. So that's in Exchange. So going back to Office 365, you can see that if I just scroll down here, let's just come in here. So I just bring this down. You have got the capability here. So if I just go into my, bring this down. Where am I? Yes, here I am. Mobile management. So this is, again, just released in the last few weeks for Office. So here, you can actually set up settings and restrictions. Now, definitely take a look at this. This is a really interesting article. There's also a great video here as well. You can control mobile access through policies as well. So you can block access to specific areas, things like Skype for Business, mobile, and so on. So again, let's just get started here. So you can apply device restrictions. You can set up security policies. So for example, if my device needs a password or a PIN or something like that, you can control that. Again, you can see you've got this wipe only corporate data. But if you want more than these things, as I mentioned, this is great for mobile devices. But if you need like the PC, if you need Mac control, if you need iOS control and all these other types of devices, then again, you can add your Windows Intune service here as well. How do I do that, Andy? That's a great question. So if I go into purchase services and essentially just scroll right down to the bottom, you can see that I've got Windows Intune here, and this is the additional price per month. Again, excuse me, I'm based in the UK. So you can do a free trial to try it out, and also you can buy it out. So, and because it's using Azure Active Directory, everything is seamless. So all your users are already created. The whole thing is seamless there. So I'm just gonna go back. So definitely take a look at that. One other thing on the subject of mobile as well, I'm just gonna go in here, just collapse this down. And if I go in, okay, I'm going to go into service settings here, and in service settings, there's something called mobile management here as well. And this is BlackBerry. Now, BlackBerry, despite what people say, is still widely used. And this is, if you're using BlackBerry and you want to take advantage of Office 365, again, you can just go ahead and enable the BlackBerry services here. And that's it. That's really all there is to it. It's fantastically simple. So again, obviously just sign your life away with an agreement and just click OK. And that's it. And you're up and running with BlackBerry. Okay. So as I said, Office 365 supports all the different products. So it's no longer just about the Windows phone. It's about the BlackBerry. It's about Apple devices. It's about Android devices. So it's again, how do you want to consume your data in Office 365? Okay. So let's talk a little bit about SharePoint Online. So SharePoint Online is one of those cornerstone products of Office 365. So the administration here really, you know, whenever I talk to customers about Office 365, when I teach a class, I always go through the class at the beginning and I say, okay, what's your knowledge of Office 365? Inevitably, SharePoint is one of the weakest areas. So I would say, folks, if you plan to do the exams, take a look at some of the SharePoint resources that are on TechNet and also, you know, MSDN as well. Some of them are great. But when we talk about SharePoint, you really need to think of it from three areas. You need to think about the end user, you need to think about the site or the site collection administrator, and then you need to think about the tenant admin. So let me give you a quick tour. I'm going to give you a quick tour of SharePoint from these three perspectives. Okay, so let's have a quick look at SharePoint. And I'm going to go into here, first of all. So first of all, from the end user perspective. So from the end user perspective, so out of the box, out of the tin, I get this site. This is called the default site collection. And you can see, you know, I get this little help area here. So, you know, just like little getting started tools. Now you can obviously remove this if you want to. Now, key things to here, if you plan to do the exams, of course, by clicking into documents, this is my OneDrive for Business. And this is an area that's begun, it's becoming very, very exciting and very, very interesting. So let's say you want to create a new user or a new document rather, I can go into here and say, hey, you know, Andy, I want to go ahead and create a Microsoft document. So the key thing is, how can I create a new document? You can create it from OneDrive, okay? So in OneDrive here, I can say, yeah, this is a test. I can then, and you can see it's just like Microsoft Office. The experience is exactly the same. I can change the font, I can change the size, the color of the the text. So it's exactly the same experience that you would have on the actual physical install. And then of course I can go to save as. I can say, okay, what do I want to save this document as? I could just say this is my company report. And if I've got an existing file, of course, I could replace it. In this case, I'm just going to go ahead and save that. Oh, sorry. Let's try that again. So, but the key thing here is even if I didn't save it and I came out of this, you can see the document's still there. So I didn't save that. I just came out. But you can see I've not lost the document. And I can easily go in and just rename this document. This is a really nice feature here, by the way. The little ellipsis here gives me a preview of the document. Again, you can go into full screen with that. You can also share the document here, of course, because it's all about sharing and collaboration. I can edit the document. An important aspect of SharePoint, of course, is collaboration. So out of that, version history might be important. So you can imagine if you're part of a project team, and a project team, you might have maybe a number of people working on a document. So again, you might find yourself having different versions of a project report. So at the end of the day, it's nice to know that you're working on the latest version. Another feature of that menu is that you can also check a document in and check that document out. So if the document's checked out, if any of you are as old as I am, you'll remember that inevitable statement when you tried to click on a shared document. This document is being used by another user. Do you wish to make a copy? It was very frustrating and very difficult to control different versions of a document. So by checking a document in and out again, this can be very, very useful. So that is my OneDrive for Business. Really great. Just to let you know that at the moment, one of the frustrating things about this, that it's being changed, of course, is that it has a 20,000 document limit. So a folder has a 20,000 document limit. And the file size limit is 2 gig. 2 gig as opposed to the 10 gig size, which is OneDrive. But of course, this is all changing. So with the new SharePoint 2016 product, which will be implemented in due course, all the size bets are off. So there's going to be quite a few changes here. So again, I mentioned this. What happens if I delete a document? So if you delete that document, of course, it goes into the recycle bin. And as you know, in Office 365, there's three magic numbers to remember, 30, 60, 90. So by default, it's deleted for 30 days. So after 30 days, it will be gone from the recycle bin. Now, if you desperately need that back, it is potentially recoverable in the data center. You can do that by a support request for up to 90 days. But again, they don't like that. So please try and educate your users to, obviously, they can pull it back within 30 days. That would be great. So really, that's the kind of the end user view. Of course, if you want to make your SharePoint look even nicer, you can use that SharePoint Designer tool. And again, if you're a really whiz with SharePoint and you're perhaps a developer, you can use tools like Visual Studio, which give you a really, really powerful impact in terms of web design. Okay, what about the administration perspective then with SharePoint? So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to flip back. You'll notice on the right-hand side here, I've got this little wheel. So if I go in here and I go into my site settings here, and if you're familiar with SharePoint 2013, then this, you're absolutely right. This is SharePoint. It's identical to the actual server version. The only good thing here, of course, is you don't need to worry yourself with backups and clustering of SQL Server databases and so on. Now, as you can imagine, there is going to be quite a few questions in the exam on SharePoint here. So definitely areas to look at, users and permissions. So definitely know about the different groups and also site permissions. Now, because this is a site collection, of course, if you've got an enterprise plan, you can have up to 300 site collections and associated websites within them. Also remember that you can have up to a 25 terabytes of storage per tenant, okay? So 25 terabytes of storage per tenant. Can I have more? Of course you can. You can purchase more if you want to. So key things to look at here, site administration. So in the site administration, you can take a look at things like regional settings. So regional settings, of course, things like what country are you in, what time zone, what calendar are you using, what's your working week. This is important here. Other things that we need to look at, language settings. So do you need your users to speak different languages? Things like search, configuring search settings. Things like managing the site features. So of course, SharePoint can potential to have lots and lots of different features, and you can switch these on and off using the site features area. Then of course, if you're a site collection administrator, this is where you can manage that first level recycle bin. So if a user or if a site admin deletes a website, you can obviously recover that from in here. So definitely take a look at some of the site administration settings here. You can also configure things like the look and feel of the site as well. So if I go into, you can change the site description, for example, of that website. You can change the logo. Let me just go back in here. So, you know, I often thought, okay, where do I click on? So for example, you can, if you know the path to the item, you can use that. And you can also add a little description for this as well here. You can also change the look and the feel so that, you know, the color scheme and things like that. So this is very much the admin settings, the look, the feel, permissions, search, regional settings. Again, from an admin perspective, this is important. Now, if you are, what about the tenant admin? So from the portal, of course, you can go down into, let me just collapse this down here. If I scroll down, you have got the admin feature at the bottom. And you can see I've got SharePoint here. So you see, it's this very much this waterfall type effect. Now, of course, if you're familiar with SharePoint, SharePoint has something called central administration. And you probably think, well, why don't have I have central administration here? Well, central administration is actually managed by Microsoft. So, and you know, that this is what you're paying for your Office 365 subscription for. You're paying for Microsoft in the data centers to look after, to back up your data, to worry about the clustering, to worry about the network load balancing. You know, this is why you pay your subscription. So you don't get access to central administration. You do, however, get access to something called tenant administration. So let's look at this. So this is the SharePoint Admin Center. Now in here, this is where I can go ahead. I can say, I want to, let's say, create a new private site collection. I can also delete a site collection here as well. You can manage the site. If there is a, if you've deleted a site, I can go ahead and restore it from the recycle bin here. You can also configure things like InfoPath, user profiles. So in SharePoint, well, if you're familiar with Active Directory, you know that Active Directory is a database. It has objects. So within the objects, objects have attributes. So in SharePoint speak, we refer to these as columns. So let's say, for example, the object in this case is our people. So we can go into the properties here, and you can actually manage all of the properties And this is great. This is where you can make a lot of money as a SharePoint consultant. Yeah, there's lots of configuration to do. It's a very, very granular product, very exciting product. Things like you might want to configure things like business connectivity services. So do you want to manage connections to your apps internal? Do you want to set up a search store? I can tell you one interesting is if you plan to do the exam, definitely look at this area. This is definitely important. If I go into my settings, you're going to get questions here. What kind of experience do you want your users to have with SharePoint Online? So this is really, you know, how do you want things viewed? What kind of user experience? The enterprise social collaboration. Do you want your users to use Yammer or do you want to use the SharePoint newsfeed feature, for example? Do you want to enable the new streaming video services for your users? Do you want to enable sharing? And this is an important area because sharing, one of the things that we used to have in Office 365 was the ability to have a public website. So now Microsoft, quite rightly, actually, I think they've said, you know, not everybody's generally got their own website. So the public website feature was removed a little while ago. So you'll have noticed in the Office 365 portal, there was an option that said public website. But if you click to it, it's basically just say, okay, you need to provide your own or we can point you in the right direction. So unfortunately, in this version of Office 365, there are no public websites. But what you can do is you can have a private site collection or a private website. You can share that out with up to 500 external users. Those users, by the way, have to have a Microsoft account, a Live account, or an Office 365 account. Okay, so you can have up to 500 external users there. So that is the Office 365 Admin Center. If I just go back to my Office 365 portal for a second, if you're like me and you're wondering, you know, how on earth can I find all of these features? One of the reasons why we're now seeing more features or more links on the portal is because it's basically shortcuts into the tools. So we've got that external sharing option here. So things like groups, if you want to set up groups, if you want to set up shared mailboxes, for example, that's a shortcut to Microsoft Exchange. So there's quite a number of shortcuts here. Now, very important, of course, that, you know, you might have users out there that don't just want to do the or use the GUI. So if you're not too happy by using the GUI and you prefer PowerShell, Andy, can I do all of this through PowerShell? Absolutely. So the difference here, though, the key thing to know is that you need to say, for example, you want a new add-spo, SharePoint Online, as opposed to add-sp user, SharePoint user. There is a difference between them. Watch out for that potential, catch-ups in the exams. So SharePoint Online. Now, at the moment, there's a good selection of SharePoint PowerShell commands. And again, with the new version that's inbound, there will be more as well. As I mentioned, external user sharing, you can make it available globally. You don't have access to public websites anymore, so just be aware of that. And there are multiple places to share with external users. Remember, those external users at a minimum must have a Live account to gain access. They don't have to have an Office 365 account, but it's very useful if you've got things like suppliers and customers who want to give access to a website, maybe for viewing purposes. So again, you can have up to 500 external connections there. Okay, so the next thing then is creating a SharePoint site collection. I showed you that. You can also set quotas and warning levels and storage quotas for the site collection. All of that is done in the tenant admin, as I just mentioned. Okay. The other thing that you can do there, of course, is you can also configure a name and a URL for the site. And this is all available in there. Okay, so I mentioned that collaboration is really important and it's very hot at the moment. So of course, you're going to have teams of users. How can I access my data in Office 365? How can I collaborate? So you can choose whether you want Yammer or news feeds. Do you want to allow co-authoring of documents? You've also got things like Project Online. Now, Project Online is a little bit like Intune. It's an additional service that you can go and purchase. And there are multiple versions of that. Let me show you that, actually. And if I go back into my portal and back into Purchase Services here, this, again, is where you can purchase those additional features for Office 365. So things like Microsoft Dynamics, social engagement. Microsoft Dynamics, Microsoft Project, Project Server. You can, of course, have different plans, and you can have different plans within your portals as well. So all of this is available through the subscriptions in Office 365 here. Okay, so we've taken in that last section, we took a look at SharePoint. Let's have a look at some sample questions here then. So, you have to instruct users to access Office On Demand documents. Where do they go to access Office On Demand? So, as I just showed you, it's the OneDrive, okay, or in this case, SkyDrive, OneDrive Pro site. Also, we've got, you need to know the difference between the full Office client and, of course, the Office On Demand and the web apps. Also know about the licensing as well. So if a user, for example, opens up a document and it's only read-only, what's wrong with this picture? The user's not a licensed user, so just be aware of that. Okay, so you have a Windows PowerShell management of SharePoint Online for Fabricam. Which command connects the SharePoint Online for PowerShell management? Again, with this one, there really is only one option. I think one of the nice things about SharePoint PowerShell here is that you say what you see. I want to connect to the SharePoint Online service. So again, you can see that this is the correct answer. Okay, so in that last section, we spoke about SharePoint, and I try to give you a look at different perspectives. We talked about the end user, we talked about the site admin, and we talked about the tenant. Finally, in this last section, I want to talk about Exchange Online. So let's take a look here. So in this section, we're going to talk about, obviously, things like configuring Microsoft Exchange, creating contacts, resources, groups. And of course, you need to be able to use the UI, but also know how to do this through PowerShell as well. I'm going to give you a little demo. So, of course, things like changing default reply addresses, secondary email addresses, SIP addresses, and so on. So let's take a look at some of these options here. Okay, so I'm going to flip over to my Exchange Online. Let's just close this down. And let's go into Microsoft Exchange. So, I'm going to go into Recipients. And in Recipients here, you can see, if you want to create a new recipient, I can say, hey, what kind of user do you want to create? So do you want to create a mailbox? Do you want to create a group? So, of course, you can create, there's different types of groups, of course, that you can create. Now, you'll notice that the mailboxes here, I can't create a mailbox as such, okay? The way to create mailboxes, of course, are you need to create the user accounts in Office 365. But you can go ahead and create groups. So you can create a distribution group. So distribution groups, great for distributing email, but you can't assign permissions. You've got the security groups, but you've also got dynamic distribution groups as well. So if sales is a member of marketing, if you add a user to sales, they automatically become a member of marketing. You can also create resource mailboxes as well. And these are 50 gig in size. Remember, mailboxes, depending on your plan, are 50 gig in size. And you can also have an archive. So if you're using the enterprise SKUs, you can actually have an archive up to 100 gig. Although they do say that it's unlimited. Yeah, but it's up to 100 gig just now. Room mailbox, or you can have an equipment mailbox. So you might have a projector, a company car, or something like that. You can also create contacts here as well. So again, with your contacts, you can say, are they a mail contact? So are they an internal user, but with an external email address, maybe a contractor or something like that? Or are they, a mail user, or are they a mail contact? So just an external contact in your organization. We also have the capability, this is really useful actually, a shared mailbox. So particularly useful if a user leaves the company, you can convert their mailbox into a shared mailbox, and then all users can get access to it. The great thing about this is you don't need additional licenses or anything like that. Okay, so that's basically creating your different types of objects then. So let's flip back to these slides. Alrighty. Now, so next thing is, of course, talking about security. And security is really important in Office 365. In fact, security is one of my favorite topics. So in this area, we're really talking about things like anti-malware, anti-spam. We're talking about mailbox migrations here as well, and also planning for Exchange Online. Also things like Skype for Business, which I'll come back to in a second. So when we talk about spam and anti-spyware, anti-spam policies, of course, we're really talking about data loss prevention. And also, obviously, you don't want to get viruses within your environment. In this next section, we're going to talk about some of the security features. One that's really exciting, by the way, is something called data loss prevention. I actually like to call it data leakage prevention, but that's just me. So it's a way that you can prevent data leaking outside your organization. And data loss prevention involves a number of features. You can set up data loss prevention policies with data loss prevention tags. So for example, if I have financial records I have to keep for a certain amount of time, you can say, hey, I need to mark this particular email and retain that email for, let's say, up to a year. Now, it's important to note that this feature is a premium feature. So it's an Exchange Plan 2 feature. And if you really want to take advantage of this, you want to look at the legal hold feature as well. So if you need to extend or restrict, prevent somebody deleting a mailbox for up to a year, you probably want to place that mailbox on legal hold. And there are some really nice white papers on that. So data loss prevention then, going back to the slides, helps us identify potential problems, but it's also ongoing monitoring this. And it can be things like sensitive data, so things like credit card numbers or employee numbers. So if I send you an email, the last thing you want is to, somebody's credit card number going out through an email. So as well as data loss prevention, we have something called Azure Rights Management as well. And this is a really exciting area because rights management is actually baked into Office 365. Again, depending on the SKU that you've got. So this is a premium feature. So if you've got an enterprise plan, you can take advantage of this. So this means basically, if I'm using, for example, Microsoft PowerPoint today, and I wanted to share Microsoft PowerPoint with you, what I essentially could do is I could say, okay, I'm going to share this PowerPoint presentation with you, but I want to restrict the permissions on it. I don't want you to be able to forward it to somebody. I don't want you to print it. You can't do things like cut, copy, and paste in it. So this is the kind of things that you can do. You might want to put a time limit on the document. So, you know, if you haven't opened it within 30 minutes, then it will explode, a little bit like Mission Impossible, I suppose. So going back here, this is essentially what it looks like. So from the end user perspective, it's essentially an end user feature. So once you enable it, once it's switched on in the portal, the user can then go into their document in here. So you can see, I can click on info, I can choose to protect the document, and you can restrict the document with certain permissions. So you can see that this is the Mac version of it. That was the PC version. This is the Mac version of it as well. So exactly the same. So this is working with Office 2016. You'll notice there just on the left-hand side, there is a little additional feature that you need to install Mac version of that. Okay, now I'm just going to come out the slide for a second, and I'm going to go to the portal again. So if you want to switch this feature on, the rights management feature on, I'm just going to go into my service settings here, and really, really easy to switch on. I'm just going to go into rights management, and all I do is just go into manage. And you can see that I've actually activated it. So it's on by default. Oh, just imagine, by the way, that if you happen to see a question, I'm not saying you will, but if you happen to see a question where you don't see that option, you know that the reason is because you've not got the right SKU. Okay, so simple thing is you've not actually got the correct SKU there. Let's take a quick look at some of those security features. So I'm going to scroll down. I'm going to go into my Exchange Admin Center. So really important for the exam is this area of compliance management here. So the ability for me as an administrator to go in here and place a mailbox on legal hold. Now, this can be done for a number of reasons. Perhaps the user has left the organization and he maybe had access to some sensitive material. You need to keep it for an amount of time. Or let's say you need to perform a forensics investigation. You suspect that the user has been up to no good. You can place that user on legal hold. Mail continues to flow into that mailbox, but the user cannot delete anything. So again, for compliance reasons, this is really powerful. There's an enormous amount of audit reports here that you can have a look at as well. Data loss prevention. So by default, I'll come back to data loss prevention in one second. Retention policies. I mentioned, so data retention policies, really useful here. So by default, you get this mailbox retention policy, and we have these retention tags. So let me just expand that just a little second. So you can see if I need to keep a document for 6 months, let's say. Incidentally, once you enable this, this is an end user feature, okay? So you can either, as an administrator, enforce this on a user by default. So any emails from Joe Smith, for example, will always be tagged with 6 months, okay? Or the user can go into Outlook and Outlook Web Access, right-click an email, and they can actually choose a retention tag from that. Do remember, though, this is a plan, an Exchange Plan 2 feature. It's a premium feature. You can also go into the retention tags here, and this is where essentially, there's a whole bunch of these actually, but this is where you can go in and you can create the retention tags there. Just a quick word about data loss prevention policies. So of course, we're all absolutely paranoid about being compliant these days. So again, being compliant, you can either create the data loss prevention policies from a template, and there's a whole bunch that you can choose from, but you can also create your own policies as well. So things like credit cards and so on. The protection I mentioned is the Exchange Online Protection feature. So this is basically where you can manage your anti-malware, anti-spam filters, and of course this is your quarantine view here. So in terms of the exam, definitely take a look at these. This is important. So I'm just gonna flip back. So eDiscovery, one thing I just, I realized I wanted to show you was the archiving. So I'll show you the archiving. So there we go, retention policies, creating retention tags, really important there, and in terms of security. So just that one thing that I forgot to actually show you. So I'm going to go into my recipients here, and I'm going to go back to my mailboxes. And if I go into Chandler here, the important one is mailbox features. So if I have a look at mailbox features, you can see he's got the default retention policy here. But if you want to set up an archive for the user, so I can also place the user on litigation hold here as well. And I can also enable archiving. So this basically replaces the need for the user to have PST files, those horrible personal stores. So if I click on view details, I can just call this Chandler's archive. Okay, and this will basically appear just below his mailbox. And he can then obviously store mail here for a long period of time. So out of the tin, it's 100 gig. Again, at the moment it says it's unlimited. So again, it says unlimited, but this is a premium feature. Okay, so if you don't see this or you don't see the archive option, it's because you're not on the appropriate plan, okay? So this will now appear up, this will now appear rather in their Outlook and Outlook Web Access screens. So just gonna save that. Okay, let's go back to the slides. Okay, now, the most important aspect, of course, of Exchange is helping users migrate to Exchange Online. So for this, there are a number of different versions or methodologies that you can use. There's one that's actually missing here, a PST migration. I just mentioned that. So PST migrations, you can use them anytime. So a PST migration is where the user has a personal store, and it's usually where the user has had email. Let's say they're using Microsoft Outlook, but they've connected to, let's say, Pop Email or something like that. Even if you're doing an IMAP migration, again, PST is very, very useful because PST doesn't just take in mail, it can pull in things like contacts, calendars, tasks, and so on. So an IMAP migration, for example, I'm just gonna speak about this in a second, an IMAP migration only brings across mail. So if the customer wants you to bring over additional content, you can use that PST migration to bring things like the calendars and contacts and so on across. Also an IMAP migration, the gotcha with an IMAP migration, it's great because it encompasses lots of different types of email, but the gotcha is that you must create the user accounts and mailboxes prior to the migration. Okay, so in the Office 365 portal, you need to create those users and the mailboxes, license the user, and then migrate the mail across. Whereas the exchange migration options, things like the cutover migration, the staged migration options, you don't need to do that. The wizard takes care of that itself. So it pulls the users across, it creates the mailboxes for the users, brings the mail across, and then you license the user afterwards. So it's important that you know that. So let's go back to the slide and let's discuss this. So the tool that we use for this is the migration tool. Andy, where is the migration tool? I'll show you in just a second. So the tool is from the recipients area in Exchange, and it's the last tab, it's the migration tool there, and this is great, okay? So you can get it from the Exchange Admin Center. Now, for all you PowerShellers out there, of course, there is PowerShell. And the really cool thing about PowerShell is, you look at the title of this screen here, New Migration Batch. So I wonder what the PowerShell command for that would be. It's new-migration-batch. So this is what makes PowerShell in Exchange really simple to use. Do remember, if you're using Exchange Online, and you're using PowerShell in Exchange, you need to use the Exchange Management PowerShell. Yes, so the PowerShell for Microsoft Exchange. So let's just have a quick look at a migration tool. Obviously, I can't do a migration because you would be here all day, and I can't do that. So if I go to the portal, you can see that we've got the migration option here. And you can click in here. Now, this is really nice. You can migrate to Exchange Online or from Exchange Online. So migrate to, and you get these options. So you can do a remote migration, and a remote move rather. This is Exchange Hybrid. A staged migration, cutover migration, and an IMAP migration. Now, one quick tip, by the way, a cutover migration doesn't use dirsync. So if you've got dirsync enabled, you need to use a staged migration solution, okay? Whereas a cutover migration doesn't need that, all right? And in fact, if that's grayed out, the answer is, it's because you're using dirsync, okay? All right, let's go back to the slide. Now, I mentioned PSTs. Now, there is there's a number of PST migration tools out there. What's really cool is in the last few weeks, we've actually seen this tool appear in the Office 365 portal. This is the import option, and this allows you to import PST files as well as other types of data into Office 365. At the moment, I gotta say, there are rumors that this may be a chargeable service. At the moment, I can't say, I don't know. But again, a very, very useful tool in the meantime. So if you need to import those PST files, those documents, again, take a look at the import feature here. Also, moving back, so we spoke about the different types of migration. What about hybrid? What if the customer has Exchange on premises already? So the customer's made that investment of Exchange and they want to keep it. But maybe perhaps for one reason or another, they maybe want to move certain mailboxes into the cloud, but they want to keep certain mailboxes on premises as well. So this, the hybrid solution is really nice. For this, by the way, the magic thing here that you need is that client access server. Now, the good thing is you get this license for free, okay, with Microsoft. So the client access server is that sticking plaster, that connector between the Exchange on-prem and the Exchange in the cloud. It's almost like the dirsync of Exchange, yes? The dirsync, so it's that sticking plaster between the cloud and Office 365. And again, an example I'm thinking about, I recently did a big migration with a school, and the teachers wanted to stay on premises, but we wanted the kids to move into the cloud. But the idea of seamless migration. So if you use some of the migration tools that I just mentioned, things like, let's say, cutover and stage migration, the one gotcha, the big gotcha here is the user's OST file, the offline store file. It needs to be recreated. So because you're moving, it's a brand new account. So what you're going to need to do is you're going to need to recreate that user profile. And obviously, users are going to need to log into Exchange and do that. So with hybrid, with that hybrid solution, you don't need to do that because it's all done in the back end. So you're moving the user's mailbox to that new server. So from the end user perspective, it's great because there's nothing, you don't need to do anything. Okay. So let's talk more about this then. Now, I remember, I call it the days of yore. It used to be all PowerShell. So this whole thing used to be PowerShell. And essentially, it's a six-step process. So we use the new hybrid configuration wizard. And I've just put these slides in here just so that you can see actually what's going on. So when you're watching this video, you can go back and you can pause this and look at the step-by-steps here. So this is what each step of the configuration wizard is actually doing, okay? So step four, you can see get-federation information, verifying the domain. It's creating the organization trust, that federation trust between the organization and the gateway. And step five, you can see it's actually creating that link now, okay? And this is the script. This is what's going on underneath that. Now, of course, you can, if you want to do an Exchange Federation, you can use PowerShell, absolutely no problem. But you can also do it through the GUI as well. So essentially, these are the requirements. You need to verify the existing connectors. You need to create the new send connector, send the existing receive connector. And that's those five steps that are the six steps that I just showed you here. So if the nice thing is, though, you don't need to do this. The key thing, the key success, though, to Exchange Hybrid, I got to emphasize this, is DNS, DNS, DNS. Get your DNS right. Your auto-discover record is critical. Do remember, everything needs SSL, so you need to have that public SSL certificate in place as well before you do any kind of configuration. So let's have a look at the configuration wizard then. So this is going Exchange Hybrid. And you can see here I'm in my Exchange Admin Center. This is Exchange 2013. And I'm just going to log on here. Now, you know that I'm on local because I've got those two extra options. You can see that on the right hand, I've got servers. So my servers, this is where I manage all my databases and disaster availability groups. But I've also got my hybrid option here as well. So let's walk through and just enable hybrid. So it says, yes, I need to have an Office 365 account, of course. So I do. So I'm going to go in and I'm going to sign into this. So I'm going to go, yep, and let me sign in. And you can see this is those six stages that I just talked about. Now, if you're using ADFS, you need to copy and paste that into a text file. Okay. I'm going to configure the client and access and mailbox server. Now, in this case, they're actually on the same box. So again, I'm just going to select my client access server and also my mailbox server. You can see they're just on the same machine here. Okay, so let's click next. Ah, now we need that all important certificate. If you don't have that, the whole thing will fall apart. Let's put in our fully qualified domain name for our Exchange organization. And then we click Next. And of course, this is where we put in our on-prem admin details. And of course, this is where we're making the connection, of course. So the next, this is where we put in our tenant. So our Office 365 tenant. And we click on, let's go for it, update. Okay, so you can see what's happening is this is connecting to the on-premises, it's joining both sides together, checks the credentials, checks the prerequisites, looks for that auto-discover record, checks for that SSL certificate. Okay, then it forms the organization federation between on-prem and in the cloud. So in obviously with hybrid, it just sees that Office 365 as an extension of itself. Configures the free busy connector, mail flow inbound and outbound, and that's it, we're done. Fantastic. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is how you run the hybrid configuration wizard. All right. Now, one little gotcha for Office 365, just a couple of tips here. Mail attachments. So if you're migrating in or out of Office 365, you can have attachment limits of up to 150 meg. The gotcha is, though, it defaults to 35 meg. So be very careful with that one. So yes, you can have it up to 150 meg, but out of the box, it's 35 meg, and that could cause issues, of course, when you're running these migration tools. Okay. Now, of course, you don't need to use the Office 365 or the Exchange tools. There are a number of third-party tools out there. To be honest, though, I've found them this is as good a tool as any of the third-party ones that are out there. Alrighty, so back to the slide. Another couple of tips as well. So if you want to adjust the mail attachment limit, but through PowerShell, this is the PowerShell scripts that you can use here. And again, you know that you could get asked exam questions on this. This is the kind of exam question that you might get. The other useful ones, I mentioned converting a user to a shared mailbox. You can only do that through SharePoint, through PowerShell, by the way. So again, setting up a shared mailbox. There's a few articles there that I found from TechNet. So hopefully you'll find those useful. So let's have a quick look at some some questions. So you need to migrate Exchange 2010. Now, 1001, it could be 2001, it doesn't really make any difference to 365. The key thing there, Hero, is you want to preserve users' OST files. And the trick question is, which migration method must you use? There is only one answer here, I'm afraid, and it's hybrid. So remote move migration is the only solution here. So it's an Exchange hybrid. In our last section, we're now going to take a quick look at Skype for Business Online. And I used to say in my classes, blink and you'll miss this, because there's really not a lot to do on the online. Of course, the story is different if you're going into hybrid, of course. So essentially, there are two interfaces that you need to configure. There is the user interface, and there is the organizational interface. So the quickest way to show you this is just through a quick demo. If I go to the portal, let me just go into my Office 365 admin, and I'm going to go into admin here. And of course, I'm gonna go into my Skype for Business. So in here, we've got just a little dashboard view, and there's lots of resources here. So if you're looking at setting up hybrid, there's some great resources here, also for the exams as well. Definitely look at those. Users, so this is my users at the moment. And if I double click this, Captain Kirk, for example, You can see what kind of quality do I want the user to have. So again, it defaults to high quality. Do you want to record the conversations? Do you want to allow anonymous attendees to dial out? This is really nice, by the way. Again, depending on your SKU with Office 365, you can actually have online meetings with up to 250 attendees out of the box. One little gotcha here is, remember this one. This is the user setting for options, external communications. So external Skype for business users and external Skype users. And you can see that this is on by default. So remember that. Dial-in conferencing, if you are using a third-party provider, you'll need to subscribe to their services separately. That's for the voice, if you're coming in through PBX. If I go to the organization settings here, you can set up presence privacy mode. So the presence privacy mode, of course, is the traffic lights that we speak about, that you see. And that's those Microsoft push and Apple push notification services here. Now, I mentioned a moment ago external communications for the users. So watch out for this one, because even though it was enabled on the user, it's not enabled for the organization. So by default, they won't be able to use this until you switch it on, like so. So, and you can say it's on except for blocked domains or only for allowed domains. Okay, so you can either have one or the other here. Okay, so if you want to block a domain, obviously, or an allowed domain, you can add that here. Again, dial-in, I'll just save that, that's fine. Dial-in conferencing, you can use the third-party provider, and you can basically export your users and import the dial-in user settings here. This is a new feature, the Microsoft Bridge. It's currently in preview. I'm not going to really discuss it here because I don't think it's relevant for the exam, but definitely take a look at it. You can also customize your own meeting invitation. And if you are planning to go to hybrid, of course, there are a number of connectivity tools that I would definitely take a look at here. Okay, and as I said, blink and you'll miss Skype for Business. Do be aware that, of course, you can, like SharePoint, like Exchange, you can manage a lot of this via PowerShell as well. I love this sequence here. You see it says get-cs online user, CS communication server. Office communication server was its original name. So again, there are a number of different commands. If you're planning to do the exam, take a look at those. Alrighty, now there you go. So you need to configure public IM conversations for Skype for Business. What settings would you enable? I just spoke about this. Okay, so again, what you would disable, it's off completely. So again, just be aware that the other three you would need to have on there. Alrighty, so there we go. I hope that you've enjoyed this hour and a few minutes of Office 365. I hope it's given you an insight into things like SharePoint and Exchange and Skype Online for Business. And also it shows you how to do things like migrate. And I hope that it's given you some ammunition for your studies for Office 365. My name is Andy Malone. I really appreciate you viewing my session today. And of course, there are lots of resources on the Virtual Academy. And also definitely take a look at some of the TechNet articles there as well. I've also put some additional resources. Now, I did mention Windows Azure. So definitely know some of the PowerShell commands for that as well. So thank you very much. And I really do appreciate you taking the time out of your day to watch this session. Thank you.